back in everyone to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We have a resident guest joining us again, someone who we have admired, seen on the stage several times, and we're so glad that he's back today with a fabulous new work. Of course, I'm speaking about Narain Weiss, who's joining us to talk about his latest work, Snake Charmer's Demise, which is happening now through June 14th, Wednesday, Friday, and Sundays at The Tank, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting thetanknyc.org. I'm excited to learn more about this piece. Narain does so much. We've gotten to see him in several productions already, and he's just a machine, just keeps cranking out these incredible pieces. So let us welcome back our friend Narain. Welcome back to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you for having me. Always stoked to be here. And just there's so much grace and love and kindness on your podcast. So thank you for having me. I'm happy to be able to contribute in some small way.
Thank you so much. It was such a joy recently to see you in Grief Hotel over at the Public. You were brilliant. That show was brilliant. Heard a lot of great praise for that on our show in particular from some wonderful artists. But now you're here with this great piece, Snake Charmer's Demise. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
100%. Thank you. Yeah, Grief Hotel was amazing. It's always nice to do a piece as an actor that really challenges your ability to take direction as well as your ability to handle tough language. So I was really excited to get the chance to do that as an actor because that informs the work as a playwright and as a producer. This piece is called The Snake Charmer's Demise, as you just said. It's a monologue which is rooted in this kind of forgotten Indian art form called Silambam. Silambam is a stick fighting martial art that existed in South India for centuries. And then the British came and they outlawed it, I think, because it was a threat of resistance on the subcontinent. And because it was outlawed, the practice continued on as a dance. And so I learned this dance form for over 10 years. And the actor, Omar Muscati, who is in this piece, just worked with me over 6 months and has picked up insane amounts of Silambam. So it's what I call a Silambam monologue. 65 minutes of one person solo show-esque, but incorporating elements of this stick fighting martial art turned dance. And that's the piece. And we saw our first preview day before, and at the time of this recording day before, and it was, I was floored. I was floored with the work that this actor up there is doing. He's incredible. And it's such a gift to be in the room with people who are talented like that.
That is so wonderful to hear. So what inspired you to pen this piece?
It's a good question. I wrote this piece as a 10-minute play 10 years ago. And 10 years ago, I very much lived in India. And the way I saw the world was more in line with how an Indian might see the world, because I had been living in India at that point for 10 years. So I wrote the piece. It went up over there at a small little festival. And then I picked it up again last year. So again, 10 years later. And thought, well, what if I approached this from a Western lens? Because now I'm very much entrenched in New York and feel very much as an American would. So what if I tried to take the same cultural piece that I wrote when I lived in that country and approached it from this lens, and without ever trying to over-explain the work, just trying to let it be and trust that audiences will pick up on a story however it is. And that's why seeing the first preview was so rewarding, because it played out exactly as I could have only hoped in my wildest dreams, which is such a gratifying feeling for any artist.
That's fabulous. Now, you've kind of touched on this a little bit, but I would love to know, I mean, the production's already up and going. What has it been like developing this new work?
This is, I think, the crux of whenever I've listened to podcasts, I've been curious about this question as well, right? How do the artists find the energy to continue to go on to fight through? And sometimes it's so exhausting. And this, like any other piece, is very exhausting. This is very much cottage industry theater, you know, very, very small scale, very low budget production wise, intentionally bare bones. So that's exhausting. It's exhausting to be the one trying to push the metaphorical rock up the hill and then having it come down routinely and then having to push it up again. But it's been incredibly rewarding, because I think for any production to work, you must be surrounded with good human beings first who happen to be great artists. And that's exactly what happened here. So the people around me are amazing. Watching it unfold with the collaborative spirit of just bringing so many artists into the same room together and watching them work their magic, it's been Huge. And I think it's surpassed what I could have hoped. I think that's the hope for any artist, but in particular when it's a piece that I was telling somebody recently, I've never seen a story like this on stage. I've never seen a story where someone is talking about people from a diaspora that conventionally we don't look at them because they are so off the grid in terms of stories being told through their lens. And so I'm really happy. I'm very happy. And I think it's a small thing to be happy after doing a production, but it's an underrated one to just get through to the end and go, I'm happy with how this has progressed. I think it's huge.
I completely agree. That sounds amazing. So building on all of this, is there a message or a thought you're hoping the audiences will take away from this piece?
I think so. I think one of them is that there are all of these individuals that kind of pass by in the shadows of our mind that we overlook very regularly, and we forget that there's a whole life and identity existing within them. And I think the secondary thesis is, and for those who will see the play, they'll be able to get more of a sense of this. For those who don't, I'll just share it. I've always been curious about how people from the LGBTQ plus community have been marginalized and very often just kind of sidelined. And in Indian culture, trans culture, LGBTQ plus culture has existed there for millennia, millennia. And it was only with the onset of the British coming in that they decided that this was barbaric and basically trained the locals to hate people like that. And so I think my secondary thesis through this piece is to just open audiences, particularly Western audiences, eyes to the fact that this is normal. It has been normal. It will be normal. It's in ancient texts. It is a normal part of everyday life that over the years, certain influences have tried to taint and say this is not normal. But that's the secondary thesis of this play, that no, this diaspora, these people, that culture is very much normal and was very normalized way back in the day, and only over the course of the past few centuries with the onset of colonization and conquering did that get stamped out and regarded as something bad. And so I really wanted to go back to those roots and remind audiences, both Indian and Western, that this is not an anomaly. This is how culture operated. For many Black and Brown cultures, there is that sense that this is a normal thing, but that it has now been turned into something that is othered. And I'm trying to bring that back, trying to bring that message back through this play in kind of a secondary storyline. And so far it's landing. So that's good.
Wonderful to hear. So finally, for this first part, I'd love to know, who do you hope have access to the world premiere of Snake Charmer's Demise?
I think very often I'm always excited for theater people to come and see a piece. But more than that, I love art that is accessible to just the masses, people who would not normally come and see theater, people who would just kind of go, yeah, I'll give that a shot. This play is 65 minutes. It runs through pretty quick. There's physical movement in a really profound and beautiful way on stage. So I think there is something for everyone. And at least for me, my attention span is so short these days. So I try to make sure that the pieces are easily digestible. The story is clear. You could maybe zone out for a couple minutes and come back in and go, no, I still know what's going on. So I think making it accessible to the non-typical artist, the non-typical art maker is always the goal, always making it accessible to just general audience members. And so I hope they're listening, and I hope they come check it out.
Well, for the second part of our show, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pick your brain, if you will. And I mean, I think we've picked your brain clear, it feels like.
Hell yeah.
You know, with the work that you do, I'm really interested to know regarding this question, you know, what changes are you most excited for in the theater, whether they're happening now or that you'd like to see happen?
I think theater has become an avenue for advocacy. I think it's a place where people can advocate for the world that they would like to see around them. And I think that's a double-edged sword. I think sometimes we get high and mighty about the work that we're creating, and we believe that it is all-encompassing, all-consuming. By the same token, sometimes we don't give ourselves enough credit for the work that we are attempting to do. I think the thing I would love to see is the venues, the theaters themselves, work more in tandem with artists. I think very often most of these brick and mortar institutions, rightly so, are focused on money, are focused on ticket sales, are focused on making sure that they are able to keep their doors open by charging high amounts, or sometimes not working with artists to allow student comps or just a chance for the advocacy to have wide-reaching influences. And I think every organization, every theatrical venue, again, that is brick and mortar, has this in their own capacity. I would like to see that change. I would like to see them just ask the artists who are coming there to work with them, how would you like to advocate for the words that you have up here? How would you like to try to make a difference, and how can we support you with that? I find that very often, and I'm not saying this is the case with any of the pieces that I've worked on or am working on, but I think very often artists are trying to do good work in spite of where they are and not in tandem with where they are. And I think there needs to be more of a connection. And I think it's happening for sure, but I would like to see more of that change.
I'm right there with you. I think that is absolutely correct. Yes, a thousand times. Put that on a t-shirt, sell it on a banner. Yes,
Yep.
it's a wonderful idea. Let me ask you, have you seen any great theater lately that you might be able to recommend to our listeners?
It's funny, this is probably the worst answer, but at the beginning of this calendar year, I just realized that, as I said earlier, my attention span was just shot to shit, and I just needed to do my best to finish a book. So I told myself, I'm not watching any movies, I'm not watching any TV shows, I'm not watching any theater. I'm just going to try to finish a book. And it was tough going, but I was glad to give myself the break. And part of the issue is when I watch theater, I really watch it. I really study it. I really try to diagnose it. I really try to see what would I fix? How would that work differently? I could say that the piece I'm excited to see right now is The Welkin at the Atlantic. I have not seen it yet, but two of my castmates from Grief Hotel are in that piece, and every actor in there is phenomenal. And I heard that a monk won the lottery, and that's how this piece is being produced. So sign me up. Apparently a monk won a lottery, which I have questions as to. I didn't know monks were allowed to buy lottery tickets. So I'm sure there's, more in there that I'm not positive of, but that's the story. A monk won the lottery and donated it here for this nonprofit theatrical venture. And that's why this piece is getting produced. So I'm curious. I'm really excited to see it. Whether it's good or bad, I'm very excited to see it.
That sounds incredible. I cannot believe that I'm in the boat with you. I'm like, are monks allowed to get? I mean, no judgments, no judgment.
Yeah.
But hey, what a great thing to do with those winnings to donate it to
Totally.
art. I mean, kudos to
Totally.
that monk.
Yeah.
Well, of course, on our show, I always have the opportunity to ask my favorite question. And I'm curious to know if you have another one to share with us. And that, of course, is what is another of your favorite theater memories?
Early on in my career, I was in India, and I was performing in what we would consider over there professional theater, but really it's, heightened community amateur theater. And it was the Bible, the complete Word of God abridged, which is three actors on stage together playing multiple parts. And it's just a laugh riot. And there's a lot of scope for improv. There's a lot of fun things. And I've been sharing this story a lot recently because people love sharing how the plays go wrong and what happens. And so during the course of this play, the entirety of the back wall set just came crashing down. And we're all standing back there going, okay, what's happening? And we just continue committing to it. And by the end of the piece, their audience members are coming up to us saying, that was well timed. How did you guys that? And we said, no, that was not the goal in the slightest. It just happened. But I think justifiably so, a lot of how we operate as actors and playwrights and producers and directors is that the show does not need to go on. We can stop. We can continue, and we can make sure everything's good and continue on. But there was something so exciting and empowering of being in a world where shit was happening, and we just decided to commit to finishing the show, making sure that we are going for it. That mentality of the show must go on as a very, very young artist is a fun one to have, and it serves you well for the rest of your life. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's my favorite, but it's one that I think back to fondly nowadays, especially when people share some of their horror stories. This one really is pretty high up there in terms of things to go wrong during a play, but the joy that you have when the things go wrong and how you manage to keep the ship afloat is always a fun memory, I think.
I love that. That is a fabulous memory and a fabulous idea behind it. That's fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Of course.
Well, as we wrap things up, I would love to know, do you have any other projects or productions coming down the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
That's so sweet. Thank you. I wrote a few plays over the course of 2 calendar years, 5 in total. 3 of them have been produced now. One is upcoming. The other one, it's just a first draft and I've never gone back and read it. So that one is called The Charioteer and the Prince. And it's a very ambitious piece. It's based on the Bhagavad Gita, which is a classic Hindu text which gave rise to the concept of yoga, and it's well known in philosophy. And so I reimagined that and did a few readings with some really good friends, good actors, and it's close. And so I'm excited to, over the course of the next 2 or 3 years, begin finding that. But as an actor, the next piece I'm going to be doing is by this wonderful playwright by the name of Jerry Lieblich. And they're putting it up at La Mama in February. And it's surreal, it's funny, it's abstract, the language is wonky. And I love work like that. And I love working with actors who know how to attack work like that. And so that's the next thing that I'm committed to at the moment. And I'm really, really excited to get started on it.
That all sounds amazing. I'm excited to know more about it. We will have to have you back on to talk about that piece.
100%.
For now, I mean, that leads to my final question, which is if our listeners would like more information about Snake Charmer's demise or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you. How can they do so?
Email me, y'all. NarainTheodoreWeiss@gmail.com. NarainTheodoreWeiss@gmail.com. I know that's crazy to just blast your email over the interwebs, but if people are interested in work that is similar to this, or a work ethic that is similar to this, then I want to meet them. I want to talk with them. I want to do work with them. So I enjoy that. I'm very much an introvert, but when it comes to work and people who work similarly to me, I always want to be around them. And so I'm excited for anyone who is of a similar mindset and excited to connect.
Wonderful. Well, Noreen, it is always a joy to speak with you. And I'm so excited about this new piece. I'm gonna have to get myself down to the tank. Toot sweet, check it out. You always do such great work. And I'm sure this
Thank
is
you.
no exception to that. So thank you so much for coming on today and thank you for your time.
Of course, thank you for having me. Can't wait to see you there. Can't wait to listen to this. You do amazing work as always, and I'm so always so honored to be around here. So thank you.
Thank you so much. That means the world. My guest today has been the incredible playwright Noreen Wise, who joined us to talk about his new work, Snake Charmer's Demise. It's playing now through June 14th, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays at The Tank. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting thetanknyc.org. And we also have some contact information for Noreen, which we'll be posting on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But hurry up, get over to thetanknyc.org or go down to The Tank. Get your tickets now. Check out this fantastic new work. Again, it's Snake Charmer's Demise, playing now through June 14th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod.
There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.